Hello and welcome again to the RPH Network, our program Optimal Life. I'm Dave Jeffrey, and with me today is Virginia Collins. Hello, Virginia.
Hello again, Dave. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Yourself?
I'm very well also. It's beautiful weather, and what could you complain about?
Isn't it nice? Yeah, after all that hot stuff we had.
So welcome to our listeners, and what's on the program today?
Well, today we're going to look at a couple of important legal concerns, power of attorney and emergency contacts. And the recent My Health records, going to see where we stand right now with them. Virginia, what have we got first up today?
Well, we have an article on powers of attorney, and this is taken from the Go 55's newspaper in autumn 2019, and it's by Greg Falk, who is the principal of Gregory Falk and Associates in Sydney. So, powers of attorney. It's not as easy as you may think. The central concept in appointing a person as your attorney is one of complete and lasting delegation, with an ability to put an end to the delegation whilst capacity to do so remains. Typically, you authorise a person to undertake daily business transactions on your behalf. The tasks of an attorney may include payment of your debts and liabilities, continuing your investments, receiving money payable to you, obtaining information about you as required, and signing contractual documents on your behalf. Subject to matters set out below, your attorney generally cannot make or revoke your will or power of attorney, act for you as a trustee, or act as you as a company director. For the appointment to withstand a challenge to validity, amongst other things, you must be able to show at the time of the appointment that you had capacity and understood the nature and effect of the proposed authorisations being given. If capacity is in doubt, the appropriate course to follow is to apply to the guardianship division of the tribunal or board in the relevant state or territory. In New South Wales, the relevant tribunal is New South Wales Civil and Administrative Tribunal, NCAT. If assets are held in a private company, trust or self-managed superannuation fund, SMSF, it may be necessary to place restrictions on actions by the attorney. For example, you may wish to prohibit your attorney from consenting to a distribution from the family trust, other than to you, or from exercising the power of appointment to appoint a trustee, or from making a binding death benefit nomination other than into your estate. If your assets include interests in a company or trust or SMSF, and you wish to authorise your attorney to exercise rights on your behalf, then you should express this desire clearly in the power of attorney instrument. Your solicitor should review the relevant company constitution and or trust deed. Are there provisions in the constitution or trust deed that allow your attorney to exercise rights for you? Is it necessary to amend the instrument? Loss of capacity. At the time when you prepare the power of attorney, you should consider what will be the impact on your role as a company director or secretary or as trustee, including as a trustee of a SMSF, if you lose capacity. Company. Your attorney cannot act in your place as a director unless the constitution authorises this. However, if you are a shareholder of the company, your attorney may be in a position to influence the appointment of company office holders. It's important, therefore, that your solicitor reviews the constitution to identify your entitlement as a shareholder in the company. Trust. In the context of trust, it's prudent for your solicitor to review the trust instrument. How and by what process can a replacement trustee be appointed? If the deed is silent, then it will be necessary to look at trustee legislation to determine how the appointment can be made. Self-managed superannuation fund. Trustees of SMSF funds are either individual trustees or directors of a company trustee. If a member loses capacity, the fund remains compliant if the legal personal representative of the incapacitated member becomes a trustee. A person holding an enduring power of attorney fails within the definition of legal personal representative. There may be difficulties in appointing a person individual trustee as trustee under an enduring power of attorney, as the appointment must be in accordance with the trust deed. The trust deed must be reviewed to determine the provisions for appointing an individual as trustee. And that was Power of Attorney by Greg Falk in the autumn 2019 The Go 55 newspaper.
The age pension is actually becoming cheaper and cheaper. This is taken from the January edition of the Combined Pensioners and Superannuants Association magazine. From January the 1st this year, for the next 18 months, the age pension eligibility will be 66. It will then go up to 66.5 and finally reach its target of 67 on the 1st of July 2023. Talks of increasing the pension age to 70 is off the table for now, but debate will reignite at some point. What may delay this reignition is the fact that the age pension is actually starting to cost the Australian government less. Now, the government acknowledges this is due to several factors. Firstly, the pension age has gone up from 65 to 66 and will land at 67, as we just said. Second, we are now beginning to see superannuation savings beginning to kick in. Third reason, too. On the 1st of January 2017, the asset test taper rate doubled. This reduced the pension payments of hundreds of thousands of pensioners. This may actually be the most important reason why the spending on the age pension has gone down. A fourth reason for the lower projected cost of the age pension may be the government's plan to require proof of life certificates. Now, these will have to be produced every 2 years for those 80 and over who are living overseas. This plan aims to stop the pension being paid to third parties after the death of a pensioner. Now, this is whether it's the result of fraud or a pensioner's family belief that they remain entitled to receive it. The requirement is to take effect from the 1st of July 2019. It's expected to save over $150 million in 4 years. Combined, these four reasons may explain why confidential treasury modelling, which has been obtained under the Freedom of Information laws, shows that the government expects the cost of the age pension to fall. They expect it to fall from 2.7% of GDP last year to 2.5% in 2038. The government's 2015 intergenerational report had the cost of the age pension holding steady. Now, that was at about 3% of GDP. Instead, the government now expects annual increase in savings for the order of $375 million a year. Now, that will be by about the year 2038, and it'll be in today's dollars. Separate monitoring by the consultancy firm Rice Warner found that the share of the population eligible to receive the age pension would decline. They said it'll go down from about 69% last year to about 57% in 2038. This may be of some comfort to those who think that the age pension will be abolished in the future. The reason? It's because the age pension is becoming unaffordable. And that item on the age pension becoming cheaper from the Combined Pension and Superannuants Association, January the 19th this year.
Well, Dave, thanks for that. Now, we had a look at the power of attorney. We're going to have a very quick look at the power of the lily, because many of us have cats, and the power of the lily with a cat is quite deadly.
Do I detect a little bias here from cat lover Virginia?
Significant bias, absolutely. So, deadly beautiful. Lilies are exquisitely beautiful and fragrant and deadly to cats. All parts of the lily are toxic, even a little bit of pollen can be fatal. Bats are fastidious creatures. They may not elect to dine on a toxic plant, but if a sprinkling of pollen lands on their fur, they will clean it off their coats and ingest the poison. But we also know that cats are curious creatures, so they might venture a bite of a plant that looks interesting or have a drink from the vase water. And whose cat doesn't explore new and fun ways to drink water? The best advice? Don't even bring lilies into the home or garden, and don't give them as gifts to cat-owning friends. There are many cat-friendly alternatives, including roses, gerberas, sunflowers, orchids and bottle brush. Cats do like to chew on greens, so grow some cat grass or catnip in a pot for them. The metabolism of a cat is unique, so never assume that because something is safe for people or other pets, that it is safe for cats. For example, flea treatment for dogs can be fatally toxic to cats. If you suspect your cat has ingested any part of a lily plant or any other poison, you should take them to see your vet immediately. Also, take the offending substance to assist the vet in identifying the toxin. Symptoms of lily poisoning include drooling, vomiting, lethargy, and loss of appetite. Even if symptoms appear to subside, renal, that's kidney, failure may occur. In any situation of suspected poisoning, therefore, it is essential that your cat receives immediate veterinary attention. Early diagnosis and treatment can save your cat's life, but prevention is definitely better. For more information on cat-friendly flowers and other cat tips, visit www.catprotection.org.au or phone the Cat Protection Society of New South Wales on 9557 4818.
That's very interesting. Did you say that catnip and cat grass, like they're because of their association with cats, that's where the name comes from, is it? They're good for cats.
They're good for cats. Cats love them. Apparently they get quite high.
Mm. Excellent. Well, that was a most interesting article and read very well by you, a cat lover too. This item comes from the ABC News in the 11th of February this year. Christmas Island's elderly face a crisis with nowhere to turn in their twilight years. Now, it's in four parts here. We've got no immediate plans, what they think, and there's a cultural responsibility, and at the moment, aged care is not really looked into. It says, things do not really kick off at Christmas Island's Poon San Club until at least 9 p.m. Then a dozen or so of its older members move in from the parlour to the Mahjong room. The mood is relaxed, but the men and the women seated four to a table barely look up during rapid play. Sometimes they go right through until the wee hours. Ang Ah Him, aged 87, has been coming here every night for as long as he can remember, probably longer. He never gambles. Instead, he comes to enjoy the company of his old friends. He tries to chat with them and pass the time. There's nowhere else to go on the island, he said through a translator. Mr. Ang, like many of his peers at the Poon San Club, is approaching an age when he and his wife may no longer be able to look after themselves. Christmas Island, where the Chinese culture has shaped society since human settlement, is facing a looming crisis. That is, how to care for its elderly. For the seniors on the island, many have spent their lives working in mines, and there's no dedicated residential aged care facility for them. Mary, who can no longer live alone, must consider a move to Perth, where there's a sizeable community of ex-islanders. If we don't think of something now, in 5 or 10 years, we'll have bigger problems. Then it might be too late. Christmas Island is a remote outpost of the Indian Ocean. It's a 45-minute flight south of Java and 4 hours northwest of Perth. A significant number of the island's population are people of Chinese and Malay descent. Their forebears were first brought to the island as indentured mine workers a century ago. Today, islanders of Chinese ancestry in particular make up more than a fifth of its 1,800 residents. We're going to look now at a cultural responsibility. Especially with the Chinese community on the island, elders are seen as early pioneers. Their sacrifices helped build the island society. It was the exploited Chinese and Malay workers whose demands for fair wages paved the way for equality. This happened to the islanders years ago, and they enjoy it today. There's a sizeable Chinese community on the island that's over the age of 80. They've been labouring for a large amount of their life, Mr. Chan said. He said they're now at the age when we have to ask the next generation to look after them. In Chinese culture, the notion is filial piety, that is, the young taking care of the old. And it rings just as true on Christmas Island. It is owed to older islanders, particularly retired Chinese and Malay workers. It's owed that they stay on the island and be cared for. This is according to Regine Anderson, a former secretary of the island's Women's Association. You can't afford the airfares to fly backwards and forwards to be with the loved ones, she said. Just because people are aged does not mean that they do not deserve to have the quality of life and their loving family members around them. Now another heading, a serious one here, no immediate plans. The Federal Department of Infrastructure, which administers the territory, said in a statement it currently offered respite and temporary residences. They also offer in-home and palliative care. A spokesperson said the department had commissioned consultants to review health services on the island. These included its aged care options, with a final report due in the first half of this year. The island's administrator, Natasha Griggs, said she hoped to report and it would be sensitive to the island's distinct culture. She said, "We need to make sure that the consultants have engaged, and especially around cultural sensitivities. We've got to look after the aged care." A solution cannot come soon enough for Mr. Chan and the members of the Poon San Club. He said, "You're paying $3,000 plus to fly over here from Perth and return. It will cost you less to drive down to Perth and suburbs, Stirling or Fremantle to get care," he said. For the time being, 87-year-old Mr. Ang has no plans to leave the island. "Christmas Island has been home to me," he said. "I live here and I will die here." A bit of a concerning look there at Christmas Island and what to do with the ageing old folks who've given their life to the place, always. Virginia, you're now going to bring us back to New South Wales.
Yes, back to New South Wales and a next of kin emergency contact program. The New South Wales Police runs the Next of Kin program for people living alone who want to make sure emergency services can contact a person of their choice in case of an emergency. You can register the details of your nominated person through the New South Wales Police's Next of Kin program. You can also register your doctor, dentist, or any other medical alert contacts that could help you in an emergency. The information can assist ambulance and police in contacting a relative or other person close to you and inform them of your situation. The New South Wales Police will give you a registered number along with a sticker and a keyring. To register for this free service, contact your local police station and speak to the Crime Prevention Officer about the Next of Kin program and the application process. So that's a very important piece of emergency information.
That certainly is, yes.
And this other next article is another very important piece of information. It's taken from the Saturday, February the 2nd, the Daily Telegraph, and it's about My Health Record, what you need to know now you have one. Most Australians have just been given an online health record, but some critics have privacy concerns, writes National Health reporter Sue Dunleavy. More than 22 million Australians yesterday got a government-owned online My Health record they were told could save their life. But experts warn the system is vulnerable to hacking and could put privacy at risk. Here we walk you through some of the things you need to know about this record and how it affects you. However, if you go looking for your health record today, you probably won't find it. It could be a month before your My Health record is created, as the government waits to process opt-out requests and generate the healthcare identifier data to set up the records. A key point is you have control over what appears in your My Health record and who can see it. Once it's created, you must act quickly to assert that control by setting up a PIN number. This is crucial because the default setting of the record is open access. That means any registered health practitioner who treats you can see it, not just your doctor, but your optometrist, dentist, podiatrist, physiotherapist, and so on. Former Australian Medical Association President and now independent MP, Professor Karen Phelps, warns that while there may be nothing sensitive in your record today, that may change in the future. For instance, you may get diagnosed with a sexually transmitted illness or impotence, and that would appear on your record. To access your My Health record, you need to set up a MyGov account. At present, only 11 million Australians have such an account. The first time you open your My Health record through your MyGov account, it will be just an empty shell. The first screen will explain how to set PIN codes to restrict access to information on the record, or to restrict which people can see it. There are videos on the website to guide you. You can also opt to prevent the government ever sharing de-identified information from your record with researchers and third parties. Experts warn it is very hard to de-identify health information. Once you activate it, the system will automatically download 2 years' worth of Medicare and pharmaceutical data onto your My Health record, unless you tell it not to. This information could reveal to anyone viewing it if you have medical conditions, including things like mental illness, impotence, or sexually transmitted diseases, or if you have had an abortion. You can delete references to mental health, drugs, or an abortion procedure, or other sensitive information, but if doctors then rely on the incomplete record, your health could be at risk. You should also check this information to make sure it's correct. There have been cases where the health records of different people have been mixed up and people have found their pharmaceutical benefits scheme data says they are taking medications they don't use for diseases they don't have. If this has happened to you, then you need to correct the mistake so doctors don't rely on incorrect information when treating you. You will need to contact Medicare and ask them to fix any errors. Next, you can enter information into the record about your next of kin and contact details for an emergency. You can upload an advance care directive that states how you would like to be treated in case of emergency. The system also links to the organ donation registry and immunisation registry if you wish. To be truly useful, your My Health record will need a shared health summary uploaded by your GP that summarises your key health conditions and allergies. You will probably need to ask your doctor to upload such a summary. At present, only 2.3 million My Health records, fewer than 1 in 10, include one. Eventually, the My Health record will include results from any blood or other pathology tests you have and your x-rays. It will be the end of the year at least before private pathology providers and diagnostic imaging clinics upload their results to the system. The potential of the My Health Record system is great for people with complex and chronic illnesses because it can keep all their key health data, medical test results, x-rays and scans in one place. But the system is still in its infancy and under development. Australian Privacy Foundation health spokesman Bernard Robertson Dunn points out that even if you miss the opt-out deadline, you can still cancel your record at any time. And that was from the Daily Telegraph, February the 2nd, by Sue Dunleavy.
Thanks, Virginia. A very, very important topic there, which is going to affect us all one way or the other. So if you're not in it, I think you can still opt out, can't you?
Yes, that's right.
If medicals, yes. Yeah. Look, just a quick one to finish off with today on health. Mozzies are a virus risk. Ross River virus has been found in mosquitoes in Western Sydney, with health authorities urging people to protect themselves against bites. Mosquitoes trapped in Deepwater Park at Bankstown and Sydney Olympic Park were found to be carrying the virus. There is no treatment, they say. Symptoms include tiredness, rash, fever, sore and swollen joints, typically within 3 weeks of being bitten. The best way to protect yourself is to avoid getting bitten.
You've been listening to Optimal Life, brought to you by Seniors Rights Service. Seniors Rights Service provides legal advocacy and education. Legal Service provides legal advice to older people in New South Wales, comprehensive referral service, limited legal assistance for financially and socially disadvantaged older people. Advice includes consumer rights, human rights, elder abuse, financial exploitation, planning for later life. Retirement Village Legal Service provides advice to residents of retirement villages, including former and prospective residents, on issues arising from disputes with the retirement village management or interpretations of a contract under the Retirement Villages Act 1999, New South Wales.
They also provide advocacy services for recipients of all Commonwealth-funded aged care services. Information about rights and responsibilities. They'll listen to your concerns, help resolve problems or complaints with your aged care service providers, speak with your service provider on your behalf if necessary, and refer you to other agencies where necessary.
Education sessions are provided regarding the rights of older people and how the organisation or partner organisations can assist them. Services are promoted and provide information at community and professional events. Targeted education is provided to a diverse range of older people, regardless of cultural background or sexual orientation.
And the Seniors Rights Service is a fully accredited community legal centre. All right, how do you contact these wonderful people? The phone number, 1-800-424-079 or seniorsrightsservice.org.au. Well, that's about all we've got time for in our program today. Virginia Collins, thank you very, very much for reading so well today.
And thank you, Dave.
All right, we'll look forward to hearing from you again in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you for being with us. You've been listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Bye for now.